Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Did You Know? I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. Today's discussion should be interesting as we're talking about HBCUs. On this particular program, or on all of our programs, what we do is expose history that should have been exposed to us all along. There seems to be a dearth of information about black life. And many times when we look at it, we're looking at it from the standpoint of those who succeeded. Now, there is much more to the story than that. And we therefore look at many of the other aspects of black life. This is not a program just for black people. It's for all people, because we need to understand what other people have gone through. It's as beneficial to white people as it is to black, as it is to Native Americans, as it is to Asians, as it is to Hispanics, and all other groups. We try to bring out the best in people, and that includes all races, all religions, all genders, because this country was founded on principles that all people could succeed. We look at the inscription on the Statue of Liberty that said, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses." But we oftentimes miss the line that is not written, the line that is above that in that poem. And that is that you keep your best. We don't want your best. Bring them here. They find opportunity here. People succeed here. People of all nations, people of all religions, people of all nationalities, everything that you can think of, whether able-bodied or handicapped, this is the place to be. Now, we have a history that in many cases may be shameful, but it doesn't have to be. Because what we find is that they did not tell about the most successful people. There are many white or Caucasian people that are carrying around a burden with them that they don't need to carry. And we see a lot of that in the story that's playing out today. Because everything from the Underground Railroad and bastions of people, even in the South, that did not agree with slavery may have been your ancestor. And this is true. We sometimes think that it was a homogenous mix, and it was not. We find that only about 2% of the people became truly wealthy off slaves. There were another few percent owned a slave or two, or maybe even more, and prospered from that institution. But it was not universal. There were people in the North that favored slavery. We don't hear about that. But there are people today that are sometimes afraid of looking into their history because they don't want to know that their ancestor was a slave owner or some other thing. I cannot change any of that. I cannot change what has happened before us, and neither can you. And we need to get over that conversation. What I hold you responsible for is the same thing I hold myself responsible for. And that is, with the information that is available, what can I do to make it better? What can I do to make it better for my children and their children and their children? If I don't do it, all I've done is kick the can down the road. That kicking the can down the road is passing on something to someone else that does not deserve that. People need to come up with the ideals on which this country was founded. And that is, you keep your best, send us the rest, and we'll do what's necessary to ensure their success. As we look at America and other countries involved, we're not the only country that has had slavery. England has had slavery. They abolished it before we did, but it still thrived around the world. And with that came many myths, because the myth was that the white people were being so benevolent to us, we didn't have to make decisions. We didn't have to do anything but get up and make them filthy rich. In turn, they would provide us coarse clothing, a meager existence, no freedom. Man is made to enjoy freedom, to be able to prosper from his labors or her labors. Because I don't want this, and I understand that language changes. We talk about mankind, and that means all people. But we have gotten to the point where we're very sensitive about it. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be. But I need us to understand that what we're talking about is prospering. The subject of today's primary discussion, and I say primary discussion because there is nothing that limits us from this particular topic, the HBCUs. When we have our programs, and we come on every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and that is to enlighten people as to what we are doing. The full focus is on this aspect of our lives. I think that we should study all people because we have a habit and a tendency to put people down, to exclude people. And in so doing, we don't get the benefit of some of the most talented people on the face of the earth. The subject today is HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities. And I want to make it clear that that is not the only measure that we should look at when we talk about people and whether they're being successful or not, because it is implausible. It's just not realistic thinking, because when we, those of you that may have been around in the 60s and 70s, heard of a term called nation time. We were going to have our own nation within a nation. And it was funny to me, because while we were pushing for that, it sounded good. But unless we had skilled people as well, it takes all type people to make a world and make it function properly. We didn't have enough people to run electricity to our houses, to put sanitary plumbing systems into our housing. We can't on college, and sometimes college and the crafts are hand in hand because there are advantages, advances that take place in one that affect another. And this is what we're talking about. And one of the other confusing factors we run into is we think that intelligence and education are the same. They are not, my friends. They're not. Some of the most brilliant people I know don't have a college degree. It is a path to middle class and higher that in many cases has been unavailable to people for various reasons. I want you to go to AmazingBlackHistory.com. Read the current post. Normally our topic of discussion is listed there because we post on Thursdays, and it gives you a few days to read up on the subject. But I know very many people, tons of them, that are highly intelligent but don't have a college degree behind their name. They don't have to have that in order to assure success. It is a measure because it shows that we have been able to tackle a problem, a major problem, learn about it, get down, and hopefully do something with that knowledge. Having a degree doesn't mean that you can apply the information that you have. There are people that are academics, and they do well in a classroom. But outside the classroom, they're like a fish out of water. They don't know what. But we need to encourage people all along the way, starting in kindergarten and before, and working up to the level. Now, as you have heard on previous programs, and as you may know, there were laws written and on the books that made it illegal to teach black people to read or write or to calculate numbers. And why was that? It was, I think, a well-thought-out plan to keep people uninformed and so they could not communicate effectively. We have people that are brilliant, that can talk and be persuasive and not know the King's English. I remember meeting a lady and talking to her and thinking, and I thought that I knew her well. I thought that she lacked education. It wasn't that, because she spoke with passion. She spoke from the heart. She was able to get things done that people with all manner of degrees and letters behind their names couldn't. Don't underestimate yourself. And this is what we're talking about in terms of our historically black colleges and universities. The reason they are started is because we were prevented from attending white institutions. There were people that did learn to read and write and could have excelled, but by not letting them in to demonstrate their capabilities, could not compete against the dominant part of society. And that's exactly what it was. So we had to form our own institutions in order to have the opportunities that other people had. A few weeks or months back, you heard me talk about James McCune Smith, the first licensed doctor in America. He couldn't find a medical school that would accept him, not because he wasn't capable, but because of the color of his skin. He was able to attend Glasgow University in Scotland, earned 3 degrees, was at the top of his class in all three. Excuse me. He did his residency in Paris and had to know at least one other language besides English because they operated in French. But we have always been good in languages. We've been good in mathematics because we basically invented it. Now, a couple of weeks ago, you may have heard me talk about the Ashingo bone, which was probably the thigh bone of a baboon or some other like creature, and it had a calculating system etched on the bone. And this goes back 18,000 to 20,000 years, if not before. So we're capable of education, but we've often been denied. I look at people that were denied the opportunity, maybe not directly, but when you have parents that you have placed in the lowest jobs around, you are damaging not only them, but future generations. And it carries over. So what we did and what we found was that among the first of the HBCUs was Cheney University, started as Cheney State College. And It's located in Cheney, Pennsylvania, and is the oldest of the HBCUs. Now, as we get started, you'll hear the term HBCU, historically black colleges and universities. These are not the only predominantly black institutions around, and there is a reason for that. The definition of an HBCU is one started before 1965 or 64, when civil rights legislation was passed. There has been civil rights legislation passed before then, but in terms of the definition, what we have afterwards are predominantly black institutions, PBIs, and these were formed either after 65 or they are white universities that converted and over a period of time serve primarily black or Hispanic or both. And in the discussion that we have today, we do have one that meets the criteria for both of those groups. So we look at the first, and that is Cheney. And I believe it was formed in 1854 or thereabouts. And it provided an opportunity for black people to get a formal education. Because along the way, we've seen many people excel that did not go to college. I'm not telling you not to go to college. That's not the purpose. Most black students attend predominantly white institutions, and I'm not discouraging that. All I want to do is to make sure that you don't overlook the opportunities here. The number of colleges that we have could not handle the number that we need. And so, therefore, it's great. I attended an HBCU. My wife attended. My daughter attended HBCUs. My son-in-law attended an HBCU. But I have a son that attended a predominantly white institution. He went to West Point. I don't fault him for that, because he knew what he wanted to do. That was the best opportunity that he had to attend school. And so it happened. I have grandkids. One of his kids graduated from there, and one is from West Point, and one is graduating this year. And so we have situations where we can get educations, but we are seeing some high profile cases where people are leaving prestigious white institutions and coming to black. When we look at Hannah Nicole Jones, who wrote the 1619 Project, was going to a white institution, turned it down, and went to Howard University. When we look at some of the greatest minds that we've had, Martin Luther King attended a HBCU. Thurgood Marshall attended one. Our Vice President, Kamala Harris, attended one. And so many other people have done that. So I don't want us to overlook that. So in the 1850s, we had Cheney. I believe it was, that may be not the correct date. But if you go to Amazing Black History, you can see this post as well as over 300 other posts. And I want you to make this one of your stops anytime you're looking for information. And I want you to contact us if you have suggestions about stories that we may talk about. This particular post came about because I was on radio earlier this morning, and the subject was HBCUs. And so I don't want to keep information bottled up. I want to share information. Just as I share it with you, I would greatly appreciate it if you would share AmazingBlackHistory.com with others, if you would share the Blog Talk Radio / Crown Talking Drums with others. It's a platform that we've used in order to communicate. Now, we have not advertised, but we have almost 10,000 people around the world that listen on a regular basis. Another institution that was formed in 1851 was University of the District of Columbia. It's a public, historically black, land-grant university, and it's located in Washington, D.C. Now, there are schools within the university, because there's a College of Arts and Sciences, School of Engineering and Applied Science, School of Business and Public Administration, College of Agriculture, Urban Sustainability and Environmental Sciences, and the David A. Clark School of Law. One of the areas that we often overlook is the need for attorneys. Now, we sometimes get the wrong view of attorneys as well, because we watch TV and every attorney is defending a criminal. But there are so many other aspects of the law that it's not funny. We have people that work on patents. We have people that work in civil rights areas. We have, in fact, I talked about Haben Girma, who graduated from Harvard School of Law. And you talk about a person that has overcome. She is deaf. She can't hear. She's blind. She can't see. And yet and still, she's graduated from one of the most prestigious law schools around. It's not an HBCU. But she is using her talent to make opportunities possible for people that are handicapped. Read about her on AmazingBlackHistory.com. So we have the University of D.C. Community College, and we will find that as we go through this, some of these colleges give AA degrees, some of them give bachelor's degrees, some of them even give PhDs. And so we're not talking about a second-rate institution by any means. They are staffed with very qualified people. We find that in many cases that Jews, for example, which we sometimes malign because we don't understand them, who they are, whatever. And what happened is we had very prestigious people in Europe that were basically displaced. Where did they go? They went to the HBCUs. They challenged the students. They produced students and went back to those institutions and did so many other things. When we talk about Marian Anderson, one of the best contraltos that this country has ever seen, that the world has ever seen, she was denied the ability to perform at Constitution Hall by the Daughters of the American Revolution. Although there were blacks that fought in the American Revolution, this was a predominant, or basically an all-white institution. They denied her on the basis of her race. When she was performing at in the area of Princeton, New Jersey, she was unable to get a room. But she struck up a friendship that lasted for well over 20 years with Albert Einstein, who understood the challenges. Because of his faith, he was denied so much. We often look not at what unites us, what we have in common ground, but we look at what diverts us, what splits us, what divides us. And this is not the formula for success. We look at Lincoln University, and it was founded as a public historically black college and university in 1854. And note that the Lincoln is not the Lincoln in Missouri. It is not the Lincoln in Missouri. They're not connected in any way. So we have Lincoln, which I believe is in Pennsylvania or Ohio. Let's see here. It was in Pennsylvania and became the second HBCU in the state of Pennsylvania because Cheney was first, the one that we talked about. Now, one of the first universities that we had was Wilberforce in Wilberforce, Ohio. Now, that was started by two church groups. There were the Black Methodists and the White Methodists, the AME. And we'll see them come up many times in relationship because many of these colleges were started by church institutions and often funded by them throughout their lifetime. And when the Civil War broke out, Wilberforce experienced a rapid decline because it was there were no institutions at the time in the South. So if you wanted an education, you had to go to Wilberforce, Lincoln, Cheney, or one of the other institutions. When that happened, the Black portion bought out the whites, and it was and Wilberforce became the first university owned and operated by Blacks. We're capable. We could run an institution. It's still operating today. A well-known university, well-respected university. And as we talk about this, there are accrediting bodies, and they're the same standards and the same bodies that accredit the HBCUs that accredit white institutions. You're not getting a second-rate education. They are there. And they offer a great opportunity. If you have the opportunity to go to any college that meets your requirements, then by all means, I'm not telling you not to. I'm just telling you don't overlook these institutions that have served us for so long and have been so good. My hometown is Spartanburg, South Carolina. And there are two colleges here, one for women at the time and one for men. And I was going to apply to the men's institution that's now co-ed, Wofford College, great institution. In fact, my grandson attended Wofford, had a challenge. He broke his back and transferred to Auburn because they had adaptive sports. But when we look at what we have in terms of sports and what we have in terms of academics, we can look at Fisk University. Fisk is one of the oldest operating universities in this country and has produced some very, very great graduates from that school. Fisk is now making waves in the area of gymnastics because they have an all. This predominantly Black institution has a gymnastic team that is second to none. So we can do what we want to. We need support. And the support doesn't just come from Black people, but people who understand what is on the line. Part of the reason that we were prevented from reading and writing and arithmetic and however the little ditty goes, it is because they didn't want competition. The people, you cannot enslave the body of a person whose mind is free. And this is part of the reason for not allowing education. Because you can read. You can go back. You can look at the Ashango bone. You can learn about the Ashango bone, which most people have never heard of. But it's that counting device that goes back 18,000 to 20,000 years ago. Most of what we know and talk about came from 4,000 years ago. We have cities in Africa such as Timbuktu, and there are thousands upon thousands of manuscripts there now that have never been translated. Part of it may be due to the fact that it is an institution on the continent of Africa. And we have a fear of showing the capabilities of people from those institutions, anything connected with Africa, dark skin, whatever. And in the process, we're cutting off our nose to spite our face. We have W.E.B. Du Bois, which many of us have heard of, know of, respect the university. He taught at Wilberforce. We had great people that were dedicated to the service of people. If you look at Frederick Douglass and what he had to go through in order to learn. Now, we moved to the South. We have Atlanta University and is now known as Clark Atlanta. And it was formed well before, I believe 1865 is when it was formed. This is about the time that the Civil War was ending. Great institution, great complex, Clark Atlanta. And they were the first to award bachelor's degrees to blacks in the South. Can you imagine? Now, understand that at this time, the Civil War is ending. And we have 11 states that have formed their own country and took up arms against the United States of America. Oftentimes, it's described as the war between the states. They were not states. They were countries. We had a president. They had a president. We had a vice president. They had a vice president. We had a constitution. They had a constitution. It was a duly formed country that took up arms. But the resentment there was that these people who were providing free labor should not learn, should not be able to communicate, should not be able to carry forth. When we look at the young lady, Amanda Gorman, for example, can you imagine during that time if she had been able to perform her poetry, her written work? And we have other people saying that, no, they are dumb. They can't even speak the language. They can't do this. They can't do that because we're not going to. And it is against the law to even teach them. Now, Clark was formed in 1869 and was the first four-year liberal college to serve blacks. And, again, it formed together with Clark Atlanta University. Shaw University was formed in 1865 and was the second HBU established in the South. Now, we sometimes don't hear about Shaw. Shaw is located in North Carolina. Later in the program, we will talk specifically, although not very in detail, about many of the colleges that are in the primary listening area for the program. We're going to talk about North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. But we do have listed in this post on AmazingBlackHistory.com on the historically black colleges and universities. If you go there, you will go to the homepage. But somewhere on the page are listed the last four to five posts that are there. Click it, and you can go to it immediately. Those that are on Facebook, share it with others on Facebook, because I post on Facebook and many other sites on Facebook the post on Thursday, and we come in on Sunday and discuss them. And it's not to be a one-way discussion. I want to answer your questions because we have a very valuable commodity that is at hand, and they were designed to serve us. Again, I'm not saying do not attend a white institution, because if I had had the ability when I got out, I probably would have attended one, because I could have stayed right here at home, attended a class, high-class college. Like I said, Wofford is excellent at placing students. But at the time, nobody was accepting black students. We have the opportunity to go now. More of our students are going to predominantly white institutions than to the historically black ones. And there's not enough capability in the black HBCUs to service all whites. So to say don't attend another institution would be ridiculous. Attend where you can. Just don't overlook what we have here. in the year we have, there was Storer College, S-T-O-R-E-R College, and it was in West Virginia. And it was incorporated into area that is now part of Harpers Ferry National Historic Park. And you remember that West Virginia split from Virginia over the subject of slavery. And we need to understand our history. We don't know what happened, how it happened, unless you read topics like AmazingBlackHistory.com. This is by far not the only one that's there. But we are led to believe that we are. We're going to talk about Alcorn. We're going to talk about Hampton Institute. We're going to talk about university. Hampton is in Virginia. Alcorn is in Mississippi, I believe. But anyway, Alcorn is a predominantly black institution adjacent to Lorman, Mississippi, and was founded in 1871. We have a desire for education. I want you to understand this. At one point, the University of South Carolina, not South Carolina State, but the University of South Carolina at one time had a predominantly black enrollment, because after the Civil War and during the Reconstruction period, it was open to all residents of the state. People desired an education, and they did whatever necessary. We sometimes miss the boat because we send our children to school, but we don't have expectations for them. And one of the things that we need to be keenly aware of is we have to make sure that our students don't get behind in their classes. This is fundamental, because if you get behind, it is difficult to catch up. And so the best thing to do is not fall behind. And if you do fall behind, catch up as quickly as you can. When Dick Gregory, and I've mentioned this on the show months and months ago, had a son. And one day the son overheard teachers talking about him. And they said, he's so dumb that you wouldn't even know he was a Gregory, because Dick Gregory had daughters. And they were doing outstandingly well. Dick, in his wisdom, when his son came to him, dismayed by this comment, said, follow your sister. Do what your sister does. And here's some advice I'm giving to the young listeners, and I hope we have tons of young listeners, and those that can influence young listeners. If you're older, encourage people to listen, of all races, but particularly black. Because we're not going to learn this in school. And when we have people like the governor of Florida, who is taking as much as he can out of the school system of even understanding who we are, as if we don't count. I mean, we need to understand. I remember talking about Polish jokes at one time, and I knew, laughing at them, that as soon as I turned the corner, I was going to be in that position. We make a habit tearing people down rather than building people up. We make a habit of tearing people down rather than building them up. I know that at some point in time, we're going to have a cure for Alzheimer's and other cognitive diseases. We didn't do it. So it's probably going to be dependent upon our children. Why not get the best out of them so they don't have to face it? If you know anybody, and you probably do, it's a matter of how close you are to that person. It is one of the saddest situations that you'll ever see. It's a long gone goodbye. If a cure comes for that, I don't care who brings it up. I benefit from it. And this is what people have to realize, is that we benefit from it. When we use the blood bank today, Dr. Charles Drew, a black doctor, discovered that because we were losing so many of our soldiers on the battlefield due to shock, blood loss. He stopped that. We don't often talk about that. But we have people that are in our institutions that can do it. My classmate at Livingstone College at one time was head of the Diabetic Association. He is still working, and he is contributing to that. An HBCU grad did that. Our future is unlimited, but we must be aware, one, that we are capable. We cannot fall into this trap that to be educated is to give up who we are. We developed mathematics. We developed learning systems. Look up Timbuktu sometimes. I think I have a post on Timbuktu. It's a strange-sounding name, but it is significant, significant. The early Greeks and Romans sent their students to Africa for education. We don't hear about that. Early Greeks did. We talk about Egypt as if it were not on the continent of Africa. Now we're making history because people are offended that they have a dark-skinned person in Africa portraying Cleopatra. And we look and we wonder. We accept what we see, not what is. When we look at our schools today, we have to understand that we are capable. The Patterson Greenfield was an auto manufacturer, a black auto manufacturer, competed against Henry Ford. The quality of the automobile was better than that of Ford. But Ford beat him out because he came up with, the assembly line. What says we can't do that? What says we can't do that? We look at Tuskegee Institute. Tuskegee gave us the Tuskegee Airmen, and they never flew a mission in which they lost a plane. Their mission was to escort bombers and other slow aircraft as they did their mission. They suffered losses. They suffered loss of life, but they never, never lost a plane. And yet and still, when they came out of the military and went into civilian work, some of the greatest pilots ever produced were denied jobs. Why? Because somebody came up with a stupid idea that a person may not want to fly with a person whose skin was dark. Had nothing to do with skill. But we are producing winners every day. Don't overlook them. We're accredited by the same institutions that anybody else is credited with. We start our journey in kindergarten, or you actually start it beforehand. As parents, we sometimes beat down our children. We don't encourage them. I'm going to tell you about a, wasn't a student, but it was an animal that attended Wofford College, bought a collie by the name of Chaser. And Chaser had the ability. He had over 1,000 toys, and they each had a unique name. It may be based on color, may be based on texture, it may be based on shape. But his owner had worked with him from an early age, and he could tell him to go get a specific toy, and he was well over 95% correct all the time. Brains are developed. Our education is developed. We have demonstrated over the past, if you look at contributions, as anybody else. Does that mean that if you're white, I'm not talking to you? No, does not mean that at all. Because once you realize that, some of the people that you may have partnered with, because the two of you were like yin and yang, are meant to be together. I'm not talking about anything beyond a business relationship, that you could complement each other. And if you don't do it, we all suffer the loss. We all suffer the loss. One of Disney's greatest cartoonists was a black man by the name of Floyd. I believe his last name was Floyd. He worked on others, and you've probably seen his work, but you didn't know that he was there. Why is that important? It's important because many times we don't emulate people that don't look like us. We can. We can. We malign. Well, we don't malign, but we don't know the full extent of what George Washington Carver did. He overcame so much. He lived in a place where there was no school for people of color. He had to go 10 miles to school, elementary school. When he finished all of the work that they had there, he had to move even further away from his home. We don't know, realize that George Washington Carver was stolen, kidnapped, whatever you want to call it, at a very young age. They stole his mother, his brother, and him. But he was sickly, so they abandoned him on the side of the road. The only way they found him is his owner had paid somebody to search for them. They never found his mother or his brother. But he even went to schools. He went to Highland College on a scholarship based on his work. And when they saw him, they said, oh, we didn't know you were black. Now, they'd accepted him on the basis of his work, his application, and everything else, but turned down. Opportunities need to come to those deserving of them. Discouraged, he homesteaded, raised 17 acres of crops, built a house, and was encouraged by a white family to apply to Simpson College with the hopes of majoring in piano. One of his well-meaning teachers said, George, I don't think a black man can earn a living in art and piano. But you have such a passion for plants. And her husband worked at Iowa State. He transferred to Iowa State. But George Washington Carver had his master's and a bright future ahead of him in Iowa. But the opportunity came that he could go back to Tuskegee. And he took a pay cut to go back to Tuskegee. The first president of Tuskegee Institute was Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington earned his degree at Hampton Institute. Hampton Institute started under the Emancipation Oak, under the leadership of Mary Peake. Mary Peake taught people under that tree. Remember, it's against the law to teach blacks, either slave or free, to read and write. Hampton is a fantastic institution. We look at others, and one of our rivals in college was Elizabeth City State. They now have an aeronautics program. As you look and as you go through this post, you will find that we have a diversity of classes. You should be able to find one. Now, let me give you this number again in case you have questions, because we have a little over 30 minutes on the program. And it's, if you want to, if you have a question, comment, suggestion, the number to call is 646-668-8217. Again, that number is 66-668-8217. I'll give it again in a couple of minutes. And so if you didn't have pencil and paper, please get it, because you can use that number anytime on any of the programs on Crown Talking Drums. And that allows you to be shown on the dashboard. If you're listening on phone and using an internet connection, I cannot see you. Therefore, I cannot open the mic to entertain your question, comment, or suggestion. But we look at institutions such as Hampton, and we have great people that have graduated from all of these. Talked about Alcorn, we talked about Hampton University, and Mary Peake, even on her deathbed, taught under the Emancipation Oak. And as far as I know, that tree is still living there. We have the Biblical Institute of Charleston. And as we talk about church-related schools, my alma mater, Livingstone College, started off at Zion Wesley Institute in Concord, North Carolina. Concord is the location of Barber Scotia College. Barber Scotia is the college that Mary McLeod Bethune attended. And Mary McLeod Bethune was one of the founders of Bethune-Cookman, a historically black college and university. When she started that, she started with a dream. And I think I'm overestimating here, but I think she had less than $2 when she started fulfilling her dream. When we have faith in ourselves, we have faith in our Creator, we can do anything. We can do anything. I was listening to the brief portion of Charles Stanley this morning, and they were talking about a comment that having faith, and if you are told, God tells you to run at that wall full speed, a brick wall, do it. Because by the time you get there, he will have made a hole for you to go through. Martin Luther King attended an HBCU. He didn't go there to learn leadership. He went there to learn theology. He went at an early age. He was gifted. He was called upon to lead the people. And he did. He didn't have all of the skills necessary, but he had the faith necessary to do so. The people that are currently attending and future attendees of historically black colleges and universities have a great future ahead of you. Those of you that have hopefully had your life enriched by having done so. having done so with people that you can make lifelong relationships with. Not that you can't do it at other institutions, because I found that people have a lot, lot, lot in common. I went forth with some intimidation, some trepidation in mind, because I left North Carolina and I went to Washington State and I worked at Hanford, which was a nuclear complex, that working with stuff that I had never worked with before, competing with students from well-known universities, as I used to call it back then, brand name. But I found out that I had received what I needed to when I was at a historically black college and university. Don't let that intimidate you. Do not. Because have faith in yourself. Have faith in your creator. George Washington Carver never took a book into his laboratory. But he got up every morning at 4 o'clock and had time with his creator. Had time with his books. He had a purpose and he knew what he was doing. Now, I want you to understand this. We only hit the high spots of his career. It is a great disservice to say that he invented peanut butter, because he didn't. But he made over 300 products out of the peanut. And if you know anything about organic chemistry, you can follow that line. But when asked if he did his greatest work with the peanut, you say no. And you'll end up scratching your head until you find out what he did with other products. The man was a genius. If you go to his museum, you'll see some of the very handy crafts that he made. What most people don't realize is that he and Henry Ford were great friends. And when George Washington Carver was unable to go from his apartment to his laboratory, one was on the first floor and one was on the second, Henry Ford sent a team of his best engineers down to put in an elevator for George Washington Carver. We don't understand sometimes what is taking place. This is one of those partnerships. They were looking at something that at the time was futuristic, because they were working on alcohol as fuel, renewable resource that did not pollute like what we have today. When metal was in short supply, Carver came up with a made from soybeans that you could hit with a sledgehammer and not leave marks on. Very forward thinking, but is not given credit for that. He has more to do with a box of Crayola crayons today than he did with peanut butter. But we don't study him. We don't go into the detail. But we have research universities now taking place, and we're getting more money because we're getting more recognition. It's not that we were not capable before. It's the fact that we were often overlooked, and I think in many cases on purpose. Because of that. But we produce proportionately to what we are given. Great value, great value. And again, I am not saying don't attend other institutions. When I sometimes I get people's email addresses, I have them send them to me. I have a friend whose great-great uncle was Freddie Stowers. And Freddie Stowers was the first black to win the Medal of Honor in World War One. World War One. There's a statue to him in Anderson, South Carolina now. And she said that at the age of 15, she attended Morgan State University, wanting to major in electrical engineering, I believe. But then she attended North Carolina A&T and changed into accounting. We produce great people. We produce great people. I could spend an entire program talking about people that have graduated from HBCUs and what they have done. But we are often kept in the dark. I want you to look down, scroll down through the article. I want you to read it. But when you get down there, let's take a look. I want to advance this because time is moving out. Georgia State University is a public research library, university in Atlanta. And it's also one of the largest in terms of a diverse population. So we have greatest Trinity Washington University is a private one in Washington, D.C. I want you to go down and see some of these. Now, when we talk about Community College of Philadelphia, it's a PBI, primarily black institution. And it was formed in 1965, actually came about in 65. And the primary reason was to educate blacks and make it easier for them to transfer to four-year institutions, get degrees, what have you. Look at all of the opportunities that are available to you. Now, let me get down to, let's take a look at Alabama, for example. Alabama A&M, Alabama State University, Bishop State Community College, Concordia College in Selma. We have Gadsden State Community College, Drake Technical College, Lawson State Community College, Miles College, Oakwood University, Selma University, Sheldon State Community College, Stillman College, Talladega College, Trent State Technical College, and Tuskegee Institute, all within Alabama. We have lots of people there, lots of opportunities. And again, I am not saying that you should pass up an opportunity to go wherever you want to go. But let's look at Georgia, because a great number of our listeners come from Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and we have them listed by state. We have Clark Atlanta that we talked about, Fort Valley State, Interdenominational Theological Center, Morehouse College, which is where Martin Luther King went, Morehouse School of Medicine. We don't have nearly enough black doctors. We don't have nearly enough black lawyers. And like I said, law consists of more than bonding criminals in or out of institutions. Their patents, their international law, there are so many aspects of it that we often overlook. Morris Brown College, Payne College, Savannah State, and another fantastic school, Spelman. Now, when I say fantastic, I don't mean that the others are second rate, but we hear lots of people that have attended Spelman, S-P-E-L-M-A-N. For years, I spelled it S-P-E-L-L-M-A-N. But one of the advantages of using the internet is that many times it spells commonly misspelled words and helps you out. But there are links to all of the ones that I have mentioned to you on this particular article. Now, I was talking to you about the young lady that attended Morgan State. It's in Maryland, Bowie State, Chapin State University, University of Maryland, Eastern Shore. You know, we have them all over. Now, let's get to North Carolina, Barbara Scotia, which is currently unaccredited, but they're working on accreditation. There's Bennett College, Elizabeth City State. We talked about them even having an aeronautics program. You can learn to fly at a HBCU. Fayetteville State, which is near Fort Bragg. Incidentally, and sometimes it's hard for me to stay on the topic, Fort Hood is going to be changing their name. Fort Hood in Texas, one of the largest military bases around, is named for John Bell Hood, a Confederate who took up arms against the United States. And they are, the name is being changed to an American that did not take up arms against America, did not go through that shameful period. Fayetteville State, Johnson C. Smith. Johnson C. Smith, Curly Neal with the Globetrotters. Some of you may be old enough to remember him. He went to Johnson C. Smith. There's Livingstone. Livingstone College and Biddle University, which is now Johnson C. Smith, played the first intercollegiate football game between two black schools, Livingstone and Biddle. Now Johnson C. Smith did that. North Carolina A&T, very famous, well-known school. North Carolina Central, also in that category. St. Augustine's, Shaw, which we talked about earlier, Winston-Salem State, Earl the Pearl Monroe graduated from there. He and Neil were playing about the same time. So we've done excellent in terms of sports and other activities. When we come to South Carolina, we've got Allen University. And I was on earlier this morning with a graduate from Allen University, Reverend W.T. Lewis, talking about the same subject. Benedict College, Claflin College. Claflin College was actually started prior to South Carolina State. South Carolina State produced Clyburn, Jim Clyburn, our current one of the representatives from South Carolina. We have Denmark Technical, Morris College, South Carolina State University, and Voorhees College in South Carolina. So we've talked about Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina. You know, I've got them everywhere. Texas, we've got Prairie View, St. Phillips. I think my sister-in-law attended St. Phillips. So we're looking at a litany of schools here, Hampton, Norfolk State, Virginia State, Virginia Union, Virginia University of Lynchburg. Schools abound, and you're not getting a second-rate education. You're not. These are class institutions, and they are available to us. We sometimes believe that for whatever reason, because sometimes we don't believe in ourselves, it's not too late to even start. I'm going to call out some ministers here because I think we're missing the boat. We have kids in school that need help. And what we can do with our churches, because this is where many of these institutions started, in the churches. Why can't we get members to tutor kids? Why can't we get members in the church to tutor adults? That should be a learning center as well. We learn about our religious practices, but we think the only time that we can go to that church is Sunday morning. No. No, no. And I challenge ministers. And if you do and start something, tell me about it. We'll make sure that it's known. I want you to understand that it is known. It is needed because we can. We've demonstrated that we can produce with the best on this planet. Recently, I talked about a proof. I believe it was on the Pythagorean theorem, where three high school young ladies produced a proof of Pythagoras' theorem that was thought impossible. Black kids,
high school did something that mathematicians have not been able to do. It has not been completely peer-reviewed, but there is nothing to suggest that it is not correct. Now, what if you had a student like that in your home, in your neighborhood, somebody that you could influence? We had the abilities. We didn't have the opportunities. We can make it possible. And I really, really, really want to challenge our pastors, because we should serve our communities, not just on Sunday when we pass the plate around, all times. Church membership is declining because we're not reaching out to real world people, solving real world problems. Many of our leaders come from our churches, being given the opportunity to speak, being given the opportunity to assume leadership roles. And I'm not just talking to the black churches. I'm talking about to all churches. I have a friend, and they are facing the problem now. It has been an all-white church, but many of in the neighborhood are not. Their pastor moved on. They have an opportunity to now, and they are actually debating the question as to whether they want black members or not. We have schools of theology associated with many of our schools. When I went to Livingstone, Hood Theological Seminary was on the campus. It held a central place. So there are many, many opportunities that we have. I see it, my friend Marshall is on. I don't see other people. Let me give that number one more time. 646-668-8217. That's area code 646-668-8217. I don't intend for this to be a one-way program. I want to encourage questions. I want to encourage discussion. I know everybody's not going to agree with me 100% of the time. Some of you maybe 0% of the time. All learn when we understand the questions and we can discuss it in an open, honest, civil dispute. There is a streak of hatred in this country. When a 16 or 17-year-old kid can't knock on somebody's door, not grab the door, but just go there to pick up their twin brothers and get shot in the head, we got a problem. And that problem comes from discussion. That problem comes from stereotypical myths that have been portrayed on us for years, the way that we've been portrayed in movies, on TV. You know, we always had to be singing and dancing and so jovial. We weren't happy in prison or in enslavement. Do you realize that they passed laws that people attending church had to take a gun with them? I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about in the 1860s, because they understood that slaves could figure out the fact that the best time to escape may be when master wasn't around. And so they passed laws. You got to carry a gun in case something happens while you ain't there. I'm preparing another discussion because on, I believe it's May 31st, I'll be at the Spartanburg Public Library in downtown Spartanburg, South Carolina, speaking on black women in the military. Black women in the military. And I think it'll open your eyes, because we go all the way back to the Revolutionary War. We have people like Mammy Kate and Daddy Jack. Mammy Kate rescued the governor, the future, at that time, the future governor of Georgia, from execution. A black woman did this, and she is reported to come from African royalty, but captured into slavery. We'll go all the way from her to current day people that you can be very, very proud of. To those of you in Spartanburg, while not military, I want you to remember the name of Shirley Tyus. Who is Shirley Tyus? She was the first black female pilot for United Airlines. United Airlines from Spartanburg, South Carolina. We have history all around us. We groom it. It's in our pores. It's in our blood. It's in our DNA. All we need is the opportunity. Encourage everybody that you can. Encourage our young people. Encourage our adults. Call them out when they come up with these negative stereotypes that we're always coming up with. And we find a way to do that. We do it way too often. We tear ourselves down when we should be uniting ourselves. Sometimes the reason that we are negative is because we don't have the experience. We don't know what we're doing. We say we can't do this, we can't do that, because we don't know people. Robert Smith, a billionaire, is starting a corporation to help kids with student loans. Who is Robert Smith? About a year or so ago, he paid off the debt of all of the college kids and I don't remember the school. But the man is a billionaire with a B. We can do it. We need more. We need entrepreneurs. And we make them in our institutions. We form them in our institutions. When I was talking to you earlier, the young lady that has started off in electrical engineering is now in Anderson, South Carolina. She's leading an educational program. Wonderful person. I went down to hear her speak during Black History Month, Dr. Risha Ree Sancho. And I believe her organization is Sancho Education. I'll have to make sure that I get the correct email address, and I'll present it on a future show in the not-too-distant future. But we have within our own neighborhoods.
All right, we'll take care of that.
Mr. Marshall.
Yes, sir.
You there?
Hey there. How are you, Mr. Abercrombie?
I'm doing well. Hope that you are also.
Yes, sir.
You got any updates? You got any updates for us?
Yeah. Yes. Out at the Florence Chapel of the Methodist Church on next Saturday from 9 until 12, we'll be working a little more on the cemetery out there. So we've announced it today in church and all. So on next Saturday from 9 until 12, we'll be at the Florence Chapel Cemetery. And we also have some update on the Welford City Hall is wanting to move the Welford City Hall to the Florence Chapel playground where they just getting started.
Oh, okay.
So we got to meet with them this week and let them know that we are not wanting the city hall to be at the same place that the playground is going to be. It don't sound right, and it certainly wouldn't look right. We don't need them over. I told them, I said, well, you remember when we had the Juneteenth and the police officers set up way before anybody else did in a position where they could sit and like they were watching over everybody. We are intelligent people. We don't need nobody to sit and watch over us. If we need the police officer, we'll call you.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully they're going to come back again. The people from the Park and Recreation out of Columbia, they'll be back again. They said they would let us know when, and I think that will maybe be the final answer to whether or not that they will get to move City Hall. Going to tear that one down, said it has mold.
Okay.
So there's a solution for that. You don't have to tear down a building because it has mold. No, you don't have to do that. They have stuff at Lowe's and Home Depot that can handle that. not to move a whole city hall. No, so that's our update kind of on this up in up here. So one other thing I'd like to mention, we went down to Woodruff to a storytelling on Friday, and the mayor, we got to meet the mayor, I think it's Giss in Woodruff, black mayor.
Okay.
All right. Then I got to thinking, I said, well, you know, we have a black mayor, and did have in Inman, Huff. Then black mayor in Anderson, black mayor in Union. You know, we've moved a long, long way. Especially you talk about a black mayor in Union, South Carolina. Do you know what Union used to stand for? And you have
Let
a black mayor down there now?
Let me tell you what happened to me in Union. I was walking down Main Street, and the Ku Klux were walking down same sidewalk. Now, this was a few years back.
Yes.
But that's my grandparents were from Union, my mother's people.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. All right. Well, I know one when I was working back in the day, and I was off on that Monday, and I said, well, I'm going to ride over in the Woodrow. And when those police saw me riding around there, at that time they had a bridge you go over to go off over into the town on 101.
Uh-huh.
They told me I need to get back across that bridge over there, back on up back to trail. They told me that, and I did exactly what they asked me to do. But we've come
a
long way.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that stuff like that used to happen. Probably still does.
That's exactly right. Because it's more prevalent now than ever. Because it seems like people now, they don't hide it. They're not hiding it. It's been there all the time. They was hiding it. Now somebody give them the license to come forward with whatever you think, whatever you want to do. Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you've been keeping up, but Antioch, which is in Northern California, they monitored the speech of, they got 95 officers, and I think over half of them were making racially derogatory comments, and people are protesting.
Yes, it's good, and thank goodness, and thank God for good white people with a thinking mind and knowing that this world would not have been where it's at if it hadn't been for black folk. No. We've made a lot of accomplishments here in this world and still doing it every day. We don't have nothing to be ashamed of. We have everything in the world to be proud of because we're somebody just like everybody else here, just like anybody else here. Yes.
Now, Marshall, you talked about something that I hope everybody paid attention to. When they were talking about putting the police station in the playground.
Yeah.
When we have meetings, we don't go. And then we complain about what came up, and we had a chance to voice our opinion. We need to voice our opinion when we have the opportunity to do so, and if we don't have the opportunity, we need to make an opportunity.
That is exactly right. I made the announcement in church today where I go to church. I was the only black man in there to get up and say something concerning keeping them out from building the police department at the playground. The only black man that was there. Now, I said, now this don't look good, you all, that nobody would show up for these meetings. I so say, and then we'll talk about what they do. I say, well, maybe ain't nobody saying nothing. They do like they've been doing, do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, see, when they closed down the swim center in Spartanburg, nobody was there when they were talking about it. And then we come in when it's too late and wanting
to
do something about it.
Yeah.
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 Become involved. Life is not a spectator sport.
Yes. Many times we've gone to the center down there where the swimming pool was at, and they would all have different competitions. And I think one of our girls out here at Welford, she won the beauty contest there one time at the swimming pool there in Spartanburg. Yeah,
okay.
I remember that back in the day. Yes. Yes, wonderful time. We had our own swimming pool. Yes.
Now, I remember Spartanburg had only one swimming pool that black people could go to, and it was in Highland. And where I lived, you had to walk quite a ways, and
yeah.
sometimes a train would be blocking the area. And, you know, we had to either
yeah.
not go or wait for the train to move or move, you know, try to crawl under the train while it was still there. I mean, dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
They didn't make
yeah.
it easy for us to participate. So now that we have the opportunity, that's one of the reasons I admire you so much, is because you're active. You get out and do stuff. Talk
yeah,
is cheap.
Yes, yes.
But
and
action
not,
is what we need.
And not one person said, how you do or nothing, according to what I had told them. I said, as soon as they come back, what we would do, we need to show up at this meeting, and we need to show up in numbers, and we need to be saying the same thing. Because when
yep.
I told them about, I was not satisfied and wasn't comfortable at the Juneteenth situation we were having with the police watching over us. One of our very own come talking about, well, I didn't feel that way. I didn't feel that way. Well, they wouldn't ask you how you felt. I was telling them how I felt. You
mm-hmm.
know, we don't meet before the meeting to come up with no solution. So when we get to the meeting, then they know we ain't did nothing, ain't met nothing, because they can tell we're not on the same page.
Okay. Now, is the mayor of Welford still the black lady that was there?
Yes, yes, Pat Watson.
Okay.
Yeah, Pat Watson.
Okay.
She's still
okay.
there. Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got a little less than 2 minutes. Anything mm-hmm. else, Marshall?
No, just anybody that can come out to Florence Chapel from 9 to 12 on next Saturday and help us out. That may be our last meeting because everything is getting green now. That may be our last cleanup for the year. Yeah.
Now, do you have an address for Florence Chapel Church?
It's on Old Spartanburg Highway. They did a lot of cleaning up there. You can see the church from the road now, but I think it's 813, I think, Old Spartanburg Highway. It's right off of 29.
Okay. I hope that people listen to that. You don't have to be black to show up, because we've had more white people than we've had black people show up.
And
people
exactly
are willing to help people willing to help themselves.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, we've got 90 seconds, so we're going to wrap it up. To those people that are listening, remember the phone number. We come on every Sunday at 4 p.m. It's been my pleasure to talk with you. Hope that you've learned something. Use that site on AmazingBlackHistory.com. Look up our institutions that we all should be proud of. It's
yes,
been my pleasure. I hope that you have a very blessed week, and I'll see you again. Yes. John C. Abercrombie, the program is Did You Know? On Crown Drums. Be blessed, my friends. Be blessed.
Be blessed. Thank you.